and welcome to all our listeners all over the world. And tonight, we're having something a bit different. It's Miracle Hour, it's about miracles, and one of the miracles in my life is my beautiful wife, Mary, and we've literally just come off the phone. We're in different countries at the moment for reasons which we'll explain a bit. But, the guest I had planned tonight had to pull out at the last minute, and Mary and I were chatting away and saying, well, what are we supposed to do there? And suddenly Mary's got a problem because she normally likes to listen, and something's gone wrong with her computer, and she didn't feel that she wanted to come on the show as such, but suddenly we had the idea that she'd be on listening and coming in whenever she feels ready to. And, sweetheart, it's wonderful to know you're on the line. Can you hear
me? Here I am, and hello, everybody. And I'm just going to try to be here to be helpful and to listen to this wonderful man and see what wisdom is going to come out of his mouth. It always does. So I'm here listening and willing to help.
Well, sweetheart, that's very sweet of you, and you know that that means a lot to me. And I don't know if it always comes out of my mouth, but all I know is that we are very tuned in. And I just tell the listeners, if you would, what happened while we were waiting to hook up to Don, because, you know, folks, it is interesting, this journey, you know, and I definitely believe that the journey is really at the end about surrender. And the miracle that we talk about and that the Course in Miracles talks about is the surrendering, the letting go of any type of control, and knowing that we are divinely guided and we are divinely led, and that when we can really trust that, you know, that's when the miracles happen. And Mary and I both love using cards. You know, to us, they're just divinity tools. And our joint passion is children. We have 11 between us and 3 grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sort of got that feeling. So Mary pulled a card. Tell them what happened, sweetheart.
Well, you're saying about surrendering when I realized that you would not... You know, the guest pulled out at the end, and I completely went into panic, thinking that, oh my God, you know, all of the things that I'm working on in my life, I don't feel that I you know, have sorted anything out completely enough to be helpful to even myself, let alone outwards. And so I went into fear, and then thought about just, you know, maybe getting inspiration from somewhere, and pulled one of the cards that we have. It had a Mary Magdalene pack, which I bought in Brisbane, Australia, on a visit home, and pulled the card of little children, and the message that went with that was about remembering what it's like when you're a child and you want to express or you want to communicate, and how you do it when you're a child is when you draw, you want to, you know, tell everybody what you've drawn and what you think that drawing is about, and, you know, you're freely expressing, and when you get to be a big person, you're slamming judgments all over everything in your life and in your head, all your thoughts and whatever. And so the message was, definitely, you know, for me, even though it's a small thing, that to come on with no preparation whatsoever, it was the card, more or less, it was me on the edge of the cliff and just little boot on the backside off the cliff, you know, just be honest. I think that's the key.
Yeah, no, that's That's beautiful. And I have to say, this feels so natural after worrying about what to do and all this. This just feels so good. And it's, you know, I feel very connected. And yeah, it is amazing. And we've had a lot of fun with, picking cards and learning from them. But definitely children is our joint mission. And like I said, for different reasons, we're on different sides of the country, of the world at the moment, but get together when we can, because we've both got children in each side of the country, in each side of the world. And it presents challenges and what have you, but you know, we're getting through them.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary suggested to me about talking a little bit about the book, which you know, I've written, and it's kind of edited, but there's been such a change in my life that it almost has to have a hatchet job taken to it. But it is interesting, because I wrote this book because of what brought me to my knees and to open up to a spiritual experience, really, was, you know, really my rock bottom in my own life. And and I call the book Addicts and Angels, A Smuggler's Voyage to Enlightenment. And it's, it is an interesting story. And I suppose that part of me that inner critic, whatever you want to call it, tells me, oh, well, you know, it's, plenty of people have done that or whatever. But every time I've talked about it, I know when I shared it with you, sweetie, the first time, you know, you said, oh my God, it's got to be a movie. And, practically everyone we've spoken to, and there is that element to it. It's, almost the Catch Me If You Can, you know, that movie that Leonardo DiCaprio was in.
Yeah.
But the connection, there's a lot of things, really, because you were also talking about relationships and repeated patterns of, you know, that repeated pattern syndrome that tends to happen until we wake up and do the healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, where I sort of got the title was The Addicts and Angels, was when I got to my knees in 1997 and decided to address my dysfunctional work and drinking, etc. I started to go around, did a lot of AA meetings and everything, and I started to hear the same kind of story in different dressing were everywhere I went, you know. And that was nearly everyone saying that as long as they could remember, they always felt different. They never felt they fitted in. They were always told they were too sensitive, a term I absolutely do not like at all, because I don't believe there is such a thing. And there were some really, you know, common threads going through everyone's story, you know. And although everyone's story was a little bit different, and they got to their knees, they got to their rock bottom in different ways, when they talked about their early days, those were the things that I kept hearing, you know. And it certainly was true in my life. It's, you know, I always felt I didn't fit in, I didn't, you know. Although I have to say, there would always be some people that I felt really, really connected to, yeah. But generally speaking, and of course, you know, when I grew up, you know, kind of 50 years ago, I guess there wasn't the awareness around there is today. But and then when I progressed on my journey after I woke up and I started to get involved in angel stuff, you know, with Doreen Virtue, and I started to do her workshops, interestingly enough, when I mixed with the people, they came up with the same characteristics, you know. And they were that they didn't feel that they fitted in, and they were always thought to be oversensitive, and found this physical world quite a challenge to them. So it kind of got me thinking about this and thinking that nearly all the people that have gone down the road of addiction in trying to numb out their feelings, you know, possibly there could be the fact that they were, were doing that because of their incredible sensitivity to the harsh third dimensional world, and then of course they misguidedly used alcohol or drugs or whatever to do that. But then because they were so sensitive, those substances had a even more powerful effect on them than they did on the average person that, you know, was not that sensitivity.
Mm.
So I started to see, because, you know, the people I met, they all had very nice hearts, you know, once they had kind of made their changes, then that they all had this desire to serve, to help others, to make the world a better place. So that's really the basis of making that connection. And the fact that, unfortunately, by using those substances and all that sort of stuff, there are obviously some behaviors that went into which were very unconscious and were not what I certainly would have done without that, you know. But it was also about the interesting phenomena of repeated patterns. And in my own life, I was brought up with... introduced to crime at a very young age by my alcoholic mother, and you know, going into shops, shoplifting, and all that kind of stuff, and never getting caught. And so deep down, what I understood when I got into this work was that what the Hoffman calls the negative love syndrome was that underneath it all, we're always searching for that love, you know, until we wake up to find out that the only place we're ever going to find it is inside us. But we're always searching for that, and that we do that unconsciously by actually repeating what our parents, and it's normally the parent who we feel we were not aligned with, you know, they didn't love us enough, if you like, for whatever reason. That was our perception. And so we'll go and repeat what they did, or we'll actually go in the opposite direction, do exactly, rebel against what they did. But in both cases, underlying it is the message of, look, you know, mummy or daddy, I'm just like you now, or I'm just the opposite to you now, will you love me more? You know,
or take notice of me. Or
yeah, or take notice of me, that's right. So I woke up to the fact that that deep down I was acting out a message that in order to gain mummy's love and approval, I had to do dishonest stuff. Mm. And as I'm actually talking, as I'm saying that now, it just really brings home some very powerful visuals of me, you know, as a young boy in the shop, you know, and mum diverting the attention and me having to fill the bag, and I got even now feelings still come, you know, about that.
Mm.
So in my case, I went off and got into smuggling oil and whiskey and to Saudi Arabia, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and until eventually I was so far removed from my authentic self, my outward behavior was just so inauthentic to who I really was, that the pain got so big. And I think that's how a lot of people make changes in their lives, you know. It's when the pain gets so big and gets bigger than the fear of change, and then people change. And
yeah, when you've suffered enough, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, love. And you say, you remember how the Course talks about that line, you know, there must be a better way.
Yeah.
That really rang true to me.
Yeah.
So, briefly, that's what the book is. It's, you know, it is a chronological account of my journey, and then, you know, of my journey in recovery as well, and all the different things I did, because in my case, once I tasted the other life, if you like, I was so dedicated. I mean, I couldn't, you know, which of course is a part of the, you know. And you said something when we first got together, sweetheart, which really resonated with me, and I laughed at it. Tell them what you said about what you think about us people who have come in, because we acknowledge, you know, that we've been around many times and all that sort of stuff, and that we come in, we choose to come in, and we have to forget about what's happened before, so we come in afresh to carry on learning lessons. And what was it you said about the tablet?
Of the forgetfulness? of the other way. Yeah, I think for some people that it just it didn't take as well as others, and you know, thank goodness for that. Really, because that's probably when you're a person like that, you've probably got a better chance of waking up to some degree. But another thing that I keep noticing is that there seems to be a common thread of a very you know, harsh time in your life, or you know, suffering, or there's been tragedy, or there's been, you know, some really tough stuff to some people that seem to wake up and really become helpful to other people. And I'm thinking, you know, of you and some other well-known teachers out there that, you know, they all seem to have come through the hard way.
Right.
Or, you know, all of the big teachers that we know now, when you hear their stories, they're, you know, there's some really horrific stories, but they either hit rock bottom, or well, I think that's what it is, when you can't suffer anymore. And what's the saying that you say, that the pain of staying the same becomes, you know,
bigger than the fear of change.
The fear, the pain of staying the same is. What is it that you say?
The people only change when the pain of staying the same gets bigger than their fear of change.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right, and it's interesting this sensitivity thing, you know, and I love that what you said about you think that people like us, when we took the tablet, you know, in metaphorical terms, to come in the amnesia tablet, it didn't work well. That we always kind of knew that this was not our real home. I think that's. Would you agree? That's the kind of feeling.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And the other similarities are that because obviously in the other realms, everything can be instant because there is no time and place.
Mm-hmm.
You can be everywhere and no, you know, at one time.
Yeah.
So there is no waiting for anything. So that is very a common trait as well amongst people who've been down addiction. You know, it's like there's a, you know, I want it and I want it now, you know.
Yeah.
Because at a deeper, and you know, sweetheart, I think that's also these indigos, these children that we're learning so much about, these new indigos. That's one of the things I notice with them. You know, there's like they've got to have everything now, because, and I think rather than condemn that, I think that is a also coming from the same place where they at some level they know that everything can be instant. You know.
I agree. And the other piece that is interesting to me at the moment is just the law of attraction concept, that is, you know, we're all saturated in that concept right now because of the secret coming out, and then I like the Esther Hicks, Abraham work better than actually, you know, looking at the secret DVD or whatever. But when she's talking about just keeping your attention on what you want, and you know, that's the way it's going to come to you, and breaking the habit of you know, really, you know, putting attention on what you don't.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's everything. This is definitely a journey, and it's a journey of learning. I mean, I honestly can say that there are things that I believed 2-3 years ago, which I don't believe today, because experience has shown me but now it's not true.
Mm.
And only today I was talking to somebody about this, you know, about the message of the secret and the law of attraction, everything, and they are very evolved spiritual being, you know, and they said, well, that is one level of spiritual growth where that is true, but they thought that you eventually go beyond that where that won't work anymore because you're actually surrendering to the soul's journey and the effects of karma, surrendering to the fact that, you know, when it's supposed to be, it'll be, and if it's not, nothing will make it so. And, you know, that was one of the things that I picked up when I went to Gary Renard, you know, who was the author of The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality, Breaking the Cycle of Birth and Death. He mentioned that, you know, and that got me to start thinking, which doesn't mean that the principles of the law of attraction and the secret don't work. It doesn't mean that at all. Absolutely not. But because we are multidimensional, there will come a time where you go beyond that and experience, you know, what is basically surrender to what is.
A surrender to the script that is already written?
Yeah, yeah. And surrendering to the fact that you are the divine energy.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just it's an interesting thing. I mean, I love the secret. I love the secret. I don't knock the secret at all, because I think it's waking up at a different level. Lots of people who normally wouldn't even get into this stuff. Would you not agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's so. You know, it's filtering in, coming through the, you know, the water system or whatever. It's coming. People are having more awareness than ever before. So that's,
yeah,
that's great. I think that something that is just starting to you know, come into my mind is about the willingness to be really open and you know, and to really listen to everything that's out there. And there's something that's the difference between faith and belief, and I am just in a place where I'm really appreciating courage when I hear it in another person who say something like, I thought that this is how things worked, and now I understand that there is some different elements, or I thought I had it, but actually what I was thinking was so off the mark, and now I'm seeing that this is the way it is. I suppose what I'm saying is that I am really enjoying honesty and people's, and trying to be it in myself as well, but seeing it firstly out there when I see courage and in other people saying, you know, I have got it wrong up to now, and I'm willing to, you know, to be open to other ways. I think that somehow, I know that I'm not explaining it very well because it's still forming in my own head, but I know that the way has to be nothing to do with dogma and restriction, and you can only believe within the boundaries of your religion, or you have to be game to be different. And and that is faith, I think, because faith gives you no security at all.
That's it. That's right.
it doesn't. You've just got to go out there and you know, you're going to look different from the rest of your, you know, peer group or family or anything. You've got to be game.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking at, dipping my toe into. But it certainly calls for courage. And I think the more you can try it, probably the better you get. Like your courage muscle gets stronger.
Yeah.
But there's
yeah.
something about that. I was reading Anthony DeMello's book Awareness, and that's just such a great message in that book. And you know, part of that message is that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I would say you've done far more than putting your toe in the water as far as the courage and the living your truth goes. You have, what I know about you, you have really stepped out there, you know, in the face of a lot of judgment, you know, and I just want to say that I think you're immensely courageous and I see that all the time.
Oh, well, thank you for that. But I think I really want to make a difference, and I can think. And I was almost tempted to say that I think that I can, be modeling something to my children, which is for me what it is completely and totally what it's about, like you were saying at the beginning, we're about children. And I am the mother of these five incredible human beings that thanks to a decision that I made when I was unconscious or asleep, I made a choice of a partner that was, not one that was going to be, what I imagine now co-parenting looks like and bringing children up to be balanced adults. But so I made a decision there, but I'm also very much now thinking about how you must forgive yourself, because I know I was in a fully unconscious state or hypnotized or however, and that's not to run away from the fact that I made a really poor choice, but I think what I'm getting and undefined, unwritten at the moment, but the message that I'll be wanting to give my children is that there's no medal for getting up on the
top
and staying there and forever flogging yourself for things that mistakes that you've made. What on earth good would come of it? None. And I'm so getting that. I'm so realizing that, we talk about forgiveness all the time. But the first person that has to be on your list is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can move outwards. But I think we get so brainwashed, don't we? As the whole thing. You get your family philosophy or line, and then it continues, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
school
I mean, I really think it's important. And, you know, you and I both are passionate about getting to teenagers and really teaching them about relationships and you know, what to, you know, there are some absolute ground rules now, which I know that teenagers will get. You know, they'll get it. They're bright, you know.
Yeah.
And the secret is in the selection. And having said that, you know, I also feel that there has been no wrong selection, even though at one level we're acknowledging, and I'm the same, you know, realizing right at the beginning that this was not really what I wanted.
No.
So we have to look and say what it was that stopped us and what it was that made us still go ahead.
Yeah.
And but in the end, we did eventually walk away, which was just about being true to ourselves. And I think this is what you're talking about, is that to really get it, that there is no benefit to the children in these marriages or unions when either party is staying under sufferance. You know, it's really giving just the wrong message, I think, to children.
Well, and you know, and in my case, and in yours, you know, just phenomenal abuse. May not have been, you know, obvious bruising or, you know, that physical form, but the other, which I now so understand, you know, the brutality of that abuse on minds.
Absolutely. And I think that's the part which has to be very much put out there and people help to be alerted to, you know. And I think it would be good to actually talk a little bit about this, you know, what happens, why we get attracted in and why we don't step away from the fire, you know. And, you know, we've spoken a lot about this, and I know you and I have shared about it, but it is at a point which I have found never feels to fit the model, and it's generally because we are unconsciously attracted to people from our family of origin, you know, normally one of our parents,
mm-hmm.
and the behavior of that parent, you know, and it's non-gender specific, which means, you know, a woman can be attracted to a man who reminds her of her mother, doesn't have to be her father, and a man can be attracted to a woman who reminds him of his father, doesn't have to be his mother. You know, it often is the opposite gender, but it doesn't have to be. It's generally the parent who we feel that we were most not honored by or loved by or cared by.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've come to understand is, you know, the reason behind it, the tool for repairing that, once we become aware of it, has to be forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because it's all the time that we have this perception, in my case, I have to be very self-owning here, that I had this perception that, you know, my mother was the devil and my father was the saint. You know, all the time I had this imbalance within me. You know, I had the memories I was acting out, you know, of my mother, you know, and the pain and the abuse and everything else. And only after I did an immensely deep piece of work, which we've spoken about, we've had guests on from the Hoffman Process, where I got into that and looked at that, and then I ended up feeling really, really balanced within me.
Mm-hmm.
In the male and the female.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I eventually, took me a little bit of time, but eventually was able to let go of my very long marriage, very long relationship, and move on. And you know, I mean, the real painful part is because the incompatibility at the beginning was so defined, you know, and we came from such opposite ends of the spectrum in the belief system, you know, that the co-parenting, as you quite rightly said, it makes it very, very difficult. And I think that's the biggest thing I want to get across to teenagers before they get into these committed relationships is to really get them to look at that and to look out for the signs of incompatibility. And like I said on the website, you know, we take all these careful surveys when we go and buy a house, but you know, when we get into these relationships when we're young, we don't look at anything, and I think because we don't receive the education about it. So I just definitely believe that there's a need there, and I believe that they would be ready to hear it.
Yeah, it seems to be a different teenager who's here right now. So the indigos or whatever, they you know, seem to be so wise and so open, and that you know, you can still see that they would go into that negative love, you know, choosing system. Probably it would kick in if they don't get the information that that you've got, John, to give them. I mean, I think I'm excited about the work that we are, you know, just now starting with the teenagers. You know, we've done some workshops with just amazing results. And when I say results, it's just, though, you know, you can have that group, which we have had, of young people, 18 and 19 and I suppose younger, who are sitting there and going, oh my goodness, I get that. You know, having that light bulb go on, my goodness, if that could go on, and it is, we've seen it go on at that age. How phenomenal for them not to have to go through, let's say you and I have gone through before waking up.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this might be a good time as well to explain to our listeners as well the concept of, you know, what I think we both believe about relationships is that, you know, nobody really teaches out there at a school level, not that I know of anyway, that the actual purpose, the sole purpose of relationship is to find our way home at a spiritual level, to wake up spiritually and to find our way home. And that if both parties in the relationship go in and understand that, it's a magical journey, as long as the compatibility is there, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to just, you know, just choose anybody in the crowd and make it work. You know, there has to be the chemistry's there for sure. But then the dance really begins, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the part which... you know, it's a model which I've seen, and I've never seen it fail. The concept is the one that Shauna McGee and Maurice Taylor taught us, you know, with their teachings in The New Couple and their book, The New Couple, is that concept that, you know, once the commitment is there, then there's a time where that euphoric stage, etc., that kind of comes to an end, and that's when the healing work starts, because the triggering starts, you know, because I think it's down to the fact that the serotonin stops being charged so much, you know.
Yeah.
And during that period, which they call it the power struggle or the flashback stage, that's the part where magic can really happen if both parties, you know, are prepared to do their individual work and their joint work.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what tends to happen when people hit that stage, one of three things really, or, you know, I mean, it's great if they both decide to do the work, that's great, but two things which have a negative impact is either A, one or other of the party put up the white flag and say, okay, you're the boss, you know, I'll do everything, which is terribly, terribly damaging. And it's interesting in us, really, because, I mean, you see it so much in these so-called Darby and Joan marriages, where the couple have been married for 40 years or 50 years, and everybody's saying, isn't it wonderful, you know, isn't it fabulous to see them together? But in reality, it's been grim forbearance in many of the cases.
You know?
Where one of the couple has sold their soul totally.
Yeah.
And the other one has been the dominant force, but is equally as miserable.
Exactly.
Because it's not an enriching thing to control another person.
No. And that people place a medal on people that hang in there. You know,
that's it.
That's the, you know, a sad thing also.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, isn't that true? You know, they put, it's almost like workaholism is also, you know, kind of medals
rewarded.
Go out for that, when really it's abandonment of family and all the rest of it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's...
But I absolutely agree with you there, and in the reality is, you know, when that happens, everyone suffers. The dysfunction that goes on within the family.
Yeah.
It's horrible, and it's repeated. Until somebody wakes up and breaks the chain,
yeah.
It's repeated.
I was looking at something too about, this is to do with the theme that's kind of, you know, obviously in my head today and the last couple of days that I'm playing with, but it was the thinking that you say you made a decision and you thought that this person was the best thing since sliced bread, and you were in a relationship, and maybe you married them, and all of that, and then you all of these things happen that you're describing. That you know, you start to kind of, the blinkers come off, and you start to see what's really really there, but and then you say that that person. It wasn't what you thought they were, or, you know, you go into all of these reasons why you now don't think the way that you thought originally about that person, and you think that the person has changed, and there is this piece, and obviously I'm still, you know, putting it together, so I'm not spitting it out very well, but... What I think really happens is that you're just plain chicken, or you know, don't have the courage to say what was wrong at the beginning was just poor judgment on my part. It wasn't that the person was what you perceived them to be, and now, you know, 5 years down the road, they're not that person, But do you know what I mean, or is it completely, probably it sounds just too still sorting it out, but it's about owning up and saying that what happened at the beginning was that just plain and simple poor judgment on...
Yeah, sure. I mean, that is what happens.
Yeah.
But I think the point I'm coming to is whatever the relationship, even when, you know... when everything's okay, that stage is going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, because I was going to get onto the second scenario, you know, is where people just split up and end up going off, you know, and
yeah.
They end up later on getting into a similar relationship with a similar pattern where it starts off great, which is the intoxication period, and then, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the thing for me is when that everyone gets together for that healing purpose, and as long as it's not abusive, you know, that there's not abuse going on, that the shades are always going to come down, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, there's no such thing as finding the perfect way. That's never going to happen. I think it's, for me, the understanding that's always going to happen.
Right.
And that's when... the dedication or the willingness or commitment of both the parties in the relationship to doing their own work and the joint work is the answer to what's been happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that takes enormous courage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that even gets me even more, you know, excited about working with the teenagers and preteens and starting to, you know, to plant little seeds about, you know, just to bring up the awareness to a much higher level about what they're about and what they're for and how you can, how you really can use them.
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, when you first started talking about different concepts, I just could not wrap my head around at all was the piece about that nobody has, ever does anything to you, and you know, if you're being triggered by something, it's in you, it's not in that other person.
Yeah.
I think that is, you know what I mean? That
I do, sweetheart, I do, and it's for me, it's the toughest one to remember when I'm in my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And
I would say, to me, it's one of the key pieces to, you know, to the whole story of living, or living well, or moving along your path. And it is what it's about, trying to you know, get to where you're supposed to be, which is joy and enthusiasm and bliss.
Yeah.
And you know, not about the security of money and you know, you're putting all of your faith in that.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, just on that concept, found that so incredibly difficult, that it's in you. If you're being triggered, it's in you, and you have to you have to go inside and look at that. To me, it would be the biggest piece, I'm sure, but my goodness, that's a hard one to get your mind around.
Oh, absolutely, and you know, I can really relate to when I first heard that. You know, I didn't want to hear it. I just kept saying, no, of course, they're making me feel that way. They're making me feel that way, you know.
Mm.
It was a really, really tough one. And even today, after, you know, a lot of work, I can still slip into that, but I've got the awareness to come out of it. And then it's always about doing my own work, you know. And that's the other thing you and I talk so much about. And I really, really want to acknowledge you, you know, because, folks, you know, Mary is a person who she's so committed to doing her own work. And like you say, sweetie, it takes enormous courage, because it is painful to go in there and deep there. And I just want to acknowledge you for your commitment to that and your ability to be honest about that, because it's essential, and it's one of the things I love about you, one of the many things I love about you, you know, and that we can work through the stuff that comes up. But also the fact that you know, when, you know, in this field, there are a lot of people, I was talking to somebody about, you know, the New Age kind of theories and all the rest of it, that if you don't do this deep lower self work, it's going to bite you in the backside eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are, you know, this pain, and I've been going through, as I shared with you, you know, a lot of fears been coming up in me recently. And, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, it's because of this, because of that. It's not. It's because it's in there, and it could be eons. It could be lifetimes, you know, previous lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Carried forward, and then things buried away deep, deep down, you know, because, you know, I keep thinking, I've covered everything in this lifetime, you know, but obviously it's still there. And all that's happening is that outside circumstances just, you know, and the more, I think the more the commitment to wanting to reach the goal, which is to go home, to be, you know, the more the commitment is there, the more this stuff's going to come up.
Right, yeah.
I really think that, and
it seems to be that. It does. And and then I think not to beat yourself up too. Like if you go into your stuff and you know, you have to be allowed to lean on a wall and take a breather. You know, if like it's like being in labor almost, like that's what I see at times. There'll be there just seems, and this could actually tie into, you know, the vibration type of stuff, but it seems like when you know, when you have a challenge, my God, there'll be four chasers, you know, behind it. And,
absolutely.
So, you know, just to be as kind as possible to yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, you know, no doubt we're here to sort all that stuff out and go home, as you say. But there's a lot of stuff and. You just have to, you know, do the best you can, and you know, some times are better than others. You know, at you know, sorting out one of your issues.
Yeah.
Because No, no. I was just going to say one thing for sure. If you don't sort it out when you've got this opportunity, you know, another will come to sort out
absolutely.
You know, whatever your fear is, you know, fear of you know, being you know, suffocated, or fear of commitment, or fear of whatever it is, like the one fear we don't have to have is that we will not keep getting opportunities to look at it, like we'll keep presenting them.
Absolutely and that's the part. But I think the word you use there, kindness, is that when you're in relationship, like as we are, you know, I think we really do practice kindness.
Absolutely. No.
And that's one of the things I want to say, is that I've found tremendous, and the thing that really attracted me to you immensely was your kindness. I could feel your heart, you know, and I knew that if at any time, you know, that slipped or whatever, it would not be from any vindictive place or that kind of stuff, you know. There was no cruelty, there was no desire to be cruel within you, and that is magical. That is magical. And to be able to be myself, that's been an amazing experience for me.
It is a nice experience, isn't it, to be able to be truly yourself with another.
Absolutely.
Those opportunities don't seem to happen too often at the moment. But I think the more you maybe become true to yourself, the more people that you'll have that experience with will come in.
And the point you were making as well is that self-love is the real, that's the bedrock, the starting point for everything. And again, we're not taught that at school, are we? You know, we're not trained to do that. And I just want to say, sweetheart, do you know that we're almost up to time, and I had so little tonight.
Oh, good. Well,
okay. Hello, caller.
Hello, John.
Hey, Mary. My God, that is incredible. Mary, can you still hear?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, you're there. God. I can really sort of hardly hear the two of you, but really, I've just got in, and I've sort of been listening to your show, and I just really sort of phone up and just, you know, acknowledge the both of you. And from my experience, you know, it is about doing this inner work.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Tim, that's wonderful. It's so lovely to hear you. And I know, oh my God, thank you for calling in.
You know, but it's just a quote. that I got from last night, and it's from Marianne Williamson. Do you know the author?
Oh, yeah, one of Mary's favourites.
And she's got a quote, and I totally believe this, and it's our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that one. Yeah, I love that one as well. Yeah, I love that, Jimmy.
You know, we have the power to choose. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, listen, we're going to get cut off. Jimmy, thanks for calling in. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Jim.
No worries, mate. I've just got in from sunbathing in the park, so...
lovely. So, and we'll give you a call and look forward to you coming over to the West Coast.
Yes, no problem, John. You take care to the both of you. And to you, Mary.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. God bless you. God bless you.
All right. Bye.
All right, sweetheart, I'm aware that we eventually get automatically cut off these days, so I just wanted to thank you for coming on with me. It's been wonderful. I love you. You're a wonderful, wonderful gift in my life.
Oh, thank you, and you are too. I mean, you have been so instrumental in a lot of lives of moving in a far healthier direction. So there's a lot of people who'd agree with me there.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Yeah. Thank
you. All righty. Well, thank you, folks, for listening tonight. Thank you for coming in, and it's been a real joy to do this, and it's gone like just gone flying by. So thank you. Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care, love. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, love. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.